Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another special edition of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. We are bringing you this special edition because it is Fannie Lou Hamer Day. And Fannie Lou Hamer is, of course, one of our, meaning in Universal Movement, Sister Saints. With that said, let's get it on.
Fannie Lou Hamer.
Thank you.
Indeed.
The Freedom Singers were singing the song Oginga Odinga. Because Oginga Odinga is one of the foremost freedom fighters on the African continent. Freedom fighters on the African continent. At the time he visited in Atlanta, Georgia, I think he was then the Minister of Home Affairs in Nairobi, in Kenya. But since Kenya became a republic last week, and Jomo Kenyatta ceased being the prime minister and became president, the same person that you are singing about, Oginga Odinga, is now Kenyatta's vice president. He's the number two man in the Kenya government. And the fact that you would be singing about him, to me, is quite significant. Two or three years ago, this wouldn't have been done. Two or three years ago, most of our people would choose to sing about someone who was, you know, passive and meek and humble and forgiving. But Oginga Odinga, humble and forgiving. But Oginga Odinga is not passive. He's not meek. He's not humble. He's not nonviolent. But he's free. Oginga Odinga is vice president under Jomo Kenyatta, and Jomo Kenyatta was considered to be the organizer of the Mau Mau. And I think you mentioned the Mau Mau in that song. And if you analyze closely those words, I think you'll have the key to how to straighten the situation out in Mississippi. When the nations of Africa are truly independent, and they will be truly independent because they're going about it in the right way, they will give the historians, will give the Prime Minister, or rather President Kenyatta, and the Mau Mau their rightful role in African history. They'll go down as the greatest African patriots and freedom fighters that continent ever knew, and they will be given credit for bringing about the independence of many of the existing independent states on that continent right now. There was a time when their image was negative, but today they're looked upon with respect, and their chief is the president, and their next chief is the vice president. And I have to take time to mention that because, in my opinion, not only in Mississippi and Alabama, but even right here in New York City, you and I can best learn how to get real freedom by studying how Kenyatta brought it to his people in Kenya and how Odinga helped him and the excellent job that was done by the Mau Mau freedom fighters. In fact, that's what we need in Mississippi. In Mississippi, we need a Mau Mau. In Alabama, we need a Mau Mau. In Georgia, we need a Mau Mau. Right here in Harlem and New York City, we need a Mau Mau. And I said, with no anger, but I said with very careful forethought, the language that you and I have been speaking to this man with in the past hasn't reached him. And you can never really get your point across to a person until you learn how to communicate with him. If he speaks French, you can't speak German. You have to know what language he speaks and then speak to him in that language. And when I listen to Mrs. Hamer, a black woman, could be my mother, my sister, my daughter, describe what they had done to her in Mississippi, I ask myself, how in the world can we ever expect to be respected as men when we know that we will allow something like that to be done to our women and we do nothing about it? How can you and I be looked upon as men with black women being beaten and nothing being done about it. Black children and black babies being beaten and nothing being done about it. No, we don't deserve to be recognized and respected as men as long as our women can be brutalized in the manner as that this woman described and nothing be done about it, but we sit around singing, "We Shall Overcome." We need them now, now. If they don't want to deal with the freedom, with the Freedom Democratic Party, then we'll give them something else to deal with. If they don't want to deal with the Student Nonviolent Committee, then we have to give them an alternative. But never stick someone out there without an alternative. We waste our time. Give them this or give them that. Give them the choice between this or that. When I was in Africa, I noticed some of the Africans got their freedom faster than others. Some areas of the African continent became independent faster than other areas. And I noticed that in the areas where independence had been gotten, someone got angry. And in the areas where independence had not been achieved yet, no one was angry. They were sad. They'd sit around and talk about their plight, but they weren't mad. And usually when people are sad, they don't do anything. They just cry over their condition. But when they get angry, they bring about a change. When they get angry, they aren't interested in logic. They aren't interested in odds. They aren't interested in consequences. When they get angry, they realize that the condition that they're in, that they're suffering, is unjust, immoral, illegal, and that anything that they do to correct it or eliminate it, they're justified. And when you and I develop that type of anger and speak in that voice, then we'll get some kind of respect and recognition and some changes from these people who have been promising us falsely already for far too long. So you have to speak their language. The language that they were speaking to Mrs. Hamer was the language of brutality. Beats they were beating her. The two Negroes, they weren't at fault. They were just puppets. You don't blame the puppet, you blame the puppeteer. They were just carrying out someone else's orders. They were in someone else, under someone else's jurisdiction. They weren't at fault. In a way they were, but I still won't blame them. I put the blame on that man who gave the order. And when you and I begin to look at him and see the language he speaks, the language of a brute, the language of someone who has no sense of morality, who absolutely ignores law, you and I then learn how to speak his language and we can communicate. But we will never communicate talking one language and he's talking another language. He's talking the language of violence and you and I running around with this little pecking type of language and think that he's going to understand. Let's learn his language. If his language is with a shotgun, get a shotgun. His language, yes, I said. If he only understands the language of a rifle, get a rifle. If he only understands the language of a rope, get a rope. But don't waste time talking the wrong language to a man if you want to really communicate with him. Speak his language. And there's nothing wrong with that. If something was wrong with that language, the federal government would have stopped the cracker from speaking it to you and me. I might say, secondly, some people wonder, well, what has Harlem got to do? What does Mississippi have to do with Harlem? It isn't actually Mississippi. It's America. America is Mississippi. There's no such thing as a Mason-Dixon line. It's America. There's no such thing as the South. It's America. If one room in your house is dirty, you got a dirty house. If the closet is dirty, you got a dirty house. Don't say that that room is dirty, but the rest of my house is clean. You're over the whole house. You have authority over the whole house. The entire house is under your jurisdiction. And the mistake that you and I make is letting these northern crackers shift the weight to the southern crackers. Hey! The senator from Mississippi, one senator from Mississippi is over the House Judiciary Committee. He's in Washington, D.C., as Mrs. Niemer has pointed out, illegally. Every senator from a state where our people are deprived of the right to vote, they're in Washington, D.C. illegally. This country is a country whose governmental system is run by committees, House committees and Senate committees. The committee chairman occupies that position by dint of his seniority. Eastman is over the Judiciary Committee because he has more seniority than any other senator after the same post or on that committee. He's the chairman. Fulbright, another cracker from Arkansas, is over the Foreign Relations Committee. Ellender of Louisiana is over the Agriculture and Forestry Committee. Russell of Georgia is over the Armed Services Committee. And it goes right on down the line. Out of 15 committees, 10 of them are in the hands of Southern races. Out of 20 congressional committees, 13 are in the hands, or at least before the recent elections, in the hands of Southern races. Out of 36 committees that govern the foreign and domestic direction of this country, 23 are in the hands of Southern races. And the reason they're in the hands of Southern races is because the area from which they come, the black man is deprived of his right to vote. If we had the ballot in that area, those races would not be in Washington, D.C. There'd be some black faces there. There'd be some brown and some yellow and some red faces there. There'd be some faces other than those cracker faces that are there right now. So what happens in Mississippi in the South has a direct bearing on what happens to you and me here in Harlem. And likewise, out of the Democratic Party, which black people supported, recently, I think something like 97%, all of these crackers, and that's what they are, crackers, they belong to the Democratic Party. That's the party they belong to. Same one you belong to. Same one you support. Same one you say is going to get you this and get you that. Like the base of the Democratic Party is in the South. If the foundation of its authority is in the South. The head of the Democratic Party is sitting in the White House. He could have gotten Mrs. Niemer in Atlantic City. He could have opened up his mouth and had her seated. Hubert Humphrey could have opened his mouth and had her seated. Wagner, the mayor right here, could have opened up his mouth and used his weight and had her seated. Don't be talking about some crackers down in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. All of them are playing the same game. Lyndon B. Johnson is the head of the cracker party. I don't want to be stepping on toes or saying things that you didn't think I was going to say. But don't ever, ever, ever call me up here to talk about Mississippi. It's controlled right up here from the north. Mississippi is controlled from the north. Alabama is controlled from the north. These northern crackers are in cahoots with the southern crackers. Only these northern crackers smile in your face and show you their teeth. And they stick a knife in your back when you turn around. You at least know what that man down there is doing, and you know how to deal with him. So all I say is this. This is all I say. That when you start talking about one, talk about the other. When you start worrying about the part or the piece, worry about the whole. And if this piece is no good, the entire pie is no good, because it all comes out of the same plate, and it's made up out of the same ingredients. Wagner is a Democrat. He belongs to the same party as Eastman. Johnson is a Democrat. He belongs to the same party as Eastman. Now, Wagner was in Atlantic City. Ray Jones was in Atlantic City. Lyndon B. Johnson was in Atlantic City. Hubert Humphrey was in Atlantic City. The crackers that you voted for were in Atlantic City. What did they do for you when you wanted to sit down? They were quiet. They were silent. They said, don't rock the boat. You might get Goldwater elected. So I just have one bit of a suggestion to offer before I sit down. And excuse me for raising my voice, but I feel like raising it. I have this bit of suggestion. Find out what Wagner is going to do in behalf of this resolution that you're trying to get through before January the 4th. Find out in advance where does he stand on these Mississippi congressmen who are illegally coming up from the South to represent Democrats. Find out where the mayor of this city stands and make him come on record without dilly-dallying and without compromise. Find out where his friends stand on seating the Mississippians who are coming forth illegally. Find out where Ray Jones, who is one of the most powerful black Democrats in this city, find out where he stands before January the 4th. You can't talk about Rockefeller because he's a Republican, although he's in the same boat right along with the rest of us. So I say in my conclusion, as Mrs. Hamer pointed out, that the brothers and the sisters in Mississippi are being beaten and killed for no reason other than they want to be treated as first-class citizens.
We all want the best of life, so let's celebrate.
First-class citizens. There's only one way to be a first-class citizen. There's only one way to be independent. There's only one way to be free. Not something that someone gives to you. Something that you take. Nobody can give you independence. Nobody can give you freedom. Nobody can give you equality or justice or anything. If you're a man, you take it. If you can't take it, you don't deserve it. Nobody can give it to you. So if you and I want freedom, we want independence, if we want respect, if we want recognition, we obey the law. We be peaceful. But at the same time, at any moment that you and I are involved in any kind of action that is legal, that is in accord with our civil rights, in accord with the courts of this land, in accord with the Constitution, when all of these things are on our side, and we still can't get it, it's because we aren't on our own side. We yet don't realize the real price necessary to pay to see that these things are enforced where we're concerned. And until we realize this, they won't be enforced where we're concerned. We have to let the people in Mississippi, as well as Mississippi, New York, and elsewhere know that freedom comes to us either by ballot or by bullet. That's the only way freedom is gotten. Freedom is gotten by ballot or bullet. These are the only two avenues, the only two roads, the only two methods, the only two means, either ballot or bullet. When you know that, when you know it, then you are careful how you use the word freedom. As long as we're going to sing up on, as long as you think we're going to sing up on some, you come in and sing. I watch you. Those of you who are singing, are you also willing to do some swinging with some of these? No, this is true. They've always said that I'm anti-white. I'm for anybody who's for freedom. I'm for anybody who's for justice. I'm for anybody who's for equality. I'm not for anybody who tells me to sit around and wait for mine. I'm not for anybody who tells me to turn the other cheek when a cracker is busting up my jaw. I'm not for anybody. I'm not for anybody who tells black people to be nonviolent while nobody is telling white people to be nonviolent. Why, I just say in my conclusion, I know I'm in the church and I probably shouldn't be talking like this, but Jesus himself, he was ready to turn the synagogue inside out and upside down when things weren't going right. In fact, in the book of Revelation, they got Jesus sitting on a sword with sitting on a horse with a sword in his hand, getting ready to go into action. But they don't tell you or me about that Jesus. They only tell you and me about that peaceful Jesus. They never let you get down to the end of the book. They keep you up there where everything is, you know, non-violent. No, go read the whole book. When you get in Revelation, you find that even Jesus' patience ran out. And when his patience ran out, he got the whole situation straightened out. He picked up the sword. So, I believe that there are some white people who might be sincere. But I think they should prove it. And if you can't prove it to me by singing with me. You can't prove it to me by being nonviolent. No. You can prove it by recognizing the law of justice. And the law of justice is, as you sow, so must you reap. The law of justice is, he who kills by the sword shall be killed by the sword. This is justice. Now, if you are with us, all I say is, make the same kind of contribution with us in our struggle for freedom that all white people have always made when they were struggling for their own freedom. And your freedom was, you were struggling for your freedom in the Revolutionary War. When your own Patrick Henry said liberty or death, and George Washington got the cannons out, and all the rest of them that you taught me to worship as my hero, they were fighters, they were warriors. But now when the time comes for our freedom, you want to reach back in the bag and grab somebody who's nonviolent and peaceful and forgiving and long-suffering. I don't go for that. Whoa. I say that a black man's freedom is as valuable as a white man's freedom. And I say that a black man has the right to do whatever is necessary to get his freedom that other human beings have done to get their freedom. Just a moment. And I say that you and I will never get our freedom. Nonviolently and patiently and lovingly. We will never get it until we let the world know that as other human beings have laid down their lives for freedom and also taken life for freedom, that you and I are ready and willing and equipped and qualified to do the same thing. This is just a shame that Mrs. Heyman came out here this afternoon where there are so few people. It's a shame. All of our people in Harlem should have heard her describe what they did to her down there. Because I think the people in Harlem are more capable of evening the score than people are anywhere else in this country. People in Harlem, yes they are. And they need to hear her story. They need to know more about firsthand what's happening down there, especially to our women. And then they need some lessons in tactics and strategy on how to get even. And I, for one, will make the first contribution to any fund that's raised for the purpose of evening the score. I, for one, will make the first contribution. Whenever someone commits murder, what do? You put a reward, wanted, dead or alive, for the murderer. Yes, learn how to do it. So we've had three people murdered. No reward has been put on the head of the murderer, and don't put it on just a reward, dead or alive. Dead or alive. And let that plan know that we can do it tit for tat. Tit for tat. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you all don't want to do it, we'll do it. We'll do it. We have brothers who are equipped and who are qualified and who are willing to as Jesus said, little children, those here are sending. We have brothers who can do that and who will do that and who are ready to do that. And I say that if the government of the United States cannot bring to justice people who murder Negroes, or people who murder those who are at the forefront, fighting in behalf of Negroes, then it's time for you and me to retire quietly to our closet and devise means and methods of seeing that justice is executed against murderers where justice has not been forthcoming in the past. Now, I say in my conclusion that if you and I here in Harlem, who form the habit oftentimes of fighting each other, who sneak around trying to wait for an opportunity to throw some acid or some lies on each other, or finger dust at each other's doorstep. If you and I were really and truly for the freedom of our people, all of the energy that we waste thinking of how to do harm for each other, since you have that engine to know how to do it, let me know. I'll give you some money and show you where to go and show you who to do it to. And then you will go down in history as having done an honorable.
I don't think it's an accident that I ended up.
And that was, of course, none other than Malcolm X, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz. That was the opening for St. Fannie Lou Hamer, 1964, I believe that was. Yep, 1964. You know, family, it's so very, very interesting to hear some of the things that Brother Malcolm just said. It was almost as if he was talking about right now. We're seeing some of the same things that he talked about. We're seeing it right now. We're going through these same processes for whatever reason. And this is why today we have to begin to flip the script and to change some things. And so tonight we want to begin introducing to you the Million Woman Party and also what we are proposing for the Black People's Party. These are some of the things you're going to hear us talk more about at the upcoming Million Woman March kickoff for the 25-year anniversary. And note again, this is a kickoff, meaning we're going to do the entire year. The next coming year is going to be filled with MWM 25 and what we call the Divine Resurrection. We are taking the time to build what we now have to build. We have put two hard decades in to establish a foundation that will allow us now to move forward in the way that we initially envisioned and then some. You're going to hear more about our Black Print Agenda 25. We call it the Ultra Black Print Agenda 25, and also see some of what we've been talking about and also working on. In a few minutes, we're going to hear one of the interviews that was featured St. Fannie Lou Hamer. But before I do that, I want to share with you a little history, her story, if we may. Fannie Lou Hamer Townsend was born on October the 6th, 1917, in Montgomery County, Mississippi. She was one of 20 children. Yep, one of 20 children. She was known for being a voting rights and women rights activist, a community organizer for sure, and also a key, I'll use the word leader, but a key entity in the so-called civil rights movement. During that era, that is what it was called. In that regard, the civil rights movement. She was also the co-founder and vice chair of the Freedom Democratic Party. Now, I'll save that sidebar. Presented in 1964, the Democratic National Convention. And so Fannie Lou Hamer organized the Mississippi Freedom Summer along with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. She was also the co-founder of the National Women's Political Caucus, an organization created to recruit, train, and support women who wish to seek election to government offices. St. Fannie Lou Hamer began being an activist in 1962, and she continued until her health declined. She was known during her activism for her use of spiritual hymns and quotes and her resilience in leading the civil rights movement for Black women in particular and Black people as a whole in Mississippi. She was extorted, threatened, harassed, shot at, and assaulted by racists, including cops, police, while trying to register for and exercise her right to vote. She later helped and encouraged thousands of Black folks in Mississippi to become registered voters and help hundreds disenfranchised people in her area through her work and programs like the Freedom Farm Cooperative. She unsuccessfully ran for the U.S. Senate in 1964 and the Mississippi State Senate in 1971. In 1970, she led legal action against the government of Sunflower County, Mississippi, for continued illegal segregation. St. Fannilou died on March the 14th, 1977, at the age of 59. She died as a result of cancer. Her memorial service was widely attended, and the eulogy was delivered by, at that time, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Andrew Young. She was posthumously inducted in the National Women's Hall of Fame in 1993. Well, that gives you a little bit of insight into some of the history of Fannie Lou Hamer. Of course, there's much, much more. And we'll be sharing more information about her as we proceed. We are now working on, of course, our first educational items that will be for children. And also adults will enjoy the activity book. And, of course, St. Fannie Lou Hamer is included in one of our 25 Sister Saints, which is what the our first educational materials will be focusing on. We're also getting ready to do our inaugural convention for the A Million Black Women Rising. And with that, we will begin to focus on a month that we will call National Black Women's Appreciation, Awareness, and Action Month. We're also going to talk about is we now want to bring forward for the campaign for there to be a national holiday for a Black woman. MWM is heading the campaign, the charge for there to be a national, recognized national holiday for a Black woman. This will, again, be one of the caucusing sessions, one of the strategy sessions at the upcoming A Million Black Women Rising Federation inauguration. And so, at this time, I want to share with you some of the actual words of St. Fannie Lou Hamer. She's speaking here to the Credentials Committee, at least that's what they were called, for the Democratic Party. And I want you to pay very close attention. This is August the 22nd, 1964. St. Fannie Lou Hamer.
With me is Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, a member of the Executive Committee of the Freedom Democratic Party and a candidate of that party for the United States Congress. Mrs. Hamer, tell us a little about yourself, what part of the South you come from, how you got involved in Freedom Democratic Party politics.
Thank you very much. My home is in Roosevelt, Mississippi, is located in the Black Belt of Mississippi, known as the Delta area. And actually, the way I got involved in the Freedom Democrat Party is we tried to get in the regular Democrat Party. We tried from the precinct level up to the county and from the county to the state. I remember when we tried to attend the precinct meeting at the little polling place in Roosevelt, it was eight Negroes went up to visit the precinct meeting, and the door was locked, and we couldn't get in. And we stood on the outside and held our own meeting. We elected our chairman and our secretary, our delegates and our alternates, and we passed the law to resolution. And we moved from the precinct level on through the county and up to the state. The 24th of April in 1964, we organized at the Masonic Temple in Jackson, Mississippi, the Mississippi Freedom Democrat Party. And then the 24th of August in 1964, we went to the National Convention in Atlantic City, New Jersey, to challenge the seating of the regular delegation from Mississippi.
In which you were unsuccessful.
That's right. We was offered 2 votes at large as a compromise.
In the convention.
In the convention. But after 100 years, we wouldn't accept the compromise because 63,000 people at that time was registered with the Freedom Democrat Party, so we didn't compromise. So again, in January, beginning the 4th of January, the 3 candidates from the Freedom Democrat Party, Mrs. Gray, Mrs. Devine, and I went up before the door of the House of Representatives to contest the seating of the 5 representatives from Mississippi, and we was turned away. We didn't go there to be seated because we knew from the beginning that we wouldn't be seated, but we wanted to explain our side. Whereas in a state that 42% of the people can't register, they wasn't representing us. And I think somebody, it's time now for somebody to be in Congress that's going to represent the people of Mississippi. And we wasn't allowed to go inside, but that didn't stop the challenge. We did have that day 149 congressmen that stood up against these people being seated. So we are still working with this challenge. And we hope by the last of this month, which is August, that we will have a chance to unseat these congressmen. Because actually, this voting bill that the president passed last week, it doesn't mean anything. And I'm not looking for a voting bill in 1965 when they are not enforcing the voting bill and our voting rights with the 15th Amendment, which guaranteed us the same rights to vote from the 15th Amendment in 1870. And at that time, 1870, Mississippi was readmitted back to the Union because they promised at that time that they wouldn't do anything to disenfranchise Negroes to keep them from registering to vote. So now it's a matter of a violation of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. What I'm curious to see, do the Constitution of the United States mean anything? So far, it hadn't worked. And I'm sick of seeing this kind of stuff on paper. We want them to do something about it because we are a part of America, because we didn't come here on our own. Our parents and our descendants were from Africa, and we didn't come on our own, but we do want to be treated as human beings. And I'm fighting for human rights, not for equal rights.
Now, what has been happening to the fortunes of the Freedom Democratic Party? Has its membership been growing?
Well, it should be. I'm not sure, but it should be close to 78,000.
Really? And how are they organized, and where? Are they across Mississippi and Alabama only, or?
Well, actually, right now, the Mississippi Freedom Democrat Party is only in Mississippi, but they have something, I would say, similar to the Freedom Democrat Party. It's beginning to pick up in other states, you know, people, Negroes in other states, even in the North, in New York City, and Brooklyn is beginning to run candidates, you know, in that area. That's right.
Must be scaring the daylights out of the Democratic Party to split the vote for them.
It might be, but that is what's happening.
That's one way of changing the Democratic Party.
And it's one way of bringing a change, you know, for the poor people all across the country.
Before joining the Freedom Democratic Party, Mrs. Hamer had been a sharecropper on a Mississippi plantation. Her husband also worked there. He had advanced to the position of foreman. But even for a foreman, which is the high point of opportunity for a Negro there, life on a southern plantation meant long hours, low wages, humiliating conditions of work, and perhaps worst of all, no hope of being accorded fair treatment, a decent standard of living, and respect as a human being. However, Negroes were now demanding equal rights, and thousands were attempting to register to vote for the first time in their lives. Among them was Mrs. Hamer. Immediately after taking the literacy test to qualify for registration as a voter in Mississippi, she learned what it costs to challenge the system of white supremacy and white privilege in that state.
I was forced away from the plantation because I wouldn't go back and withdraw, you know, my literacy test after I had tried to take it. I wouldn't go back, and I had to leave, and my husband was forced to stay on this plantation until after the harvest season was over, and then the man that we had worked for, he'd taken the car, and the most of the few things we had been stolen, and I've been in jail, and I've been beat.
Yeah, tell us about that. On what grounds did they jail you?
It wasn't no grounds. You know, I don't understand that until today. I had been to a voter registration workshop, you know, to just training and teaching us how to register, to pass the literacy test. And it was giving us enough training that we could tell other people, you know, how to pass the literacy test. But we had attended a workshop from the 3rd of June to the 8th. We finished the workshop on the 8th, and then we got the Continental Trailway bus to come back to Mississippi. And we got to Winona, Mississippi, I would say about 10:30 that Sunday morning on our way back to Greenwood. And that was, we had gotten in 25 miles of the voter registration headquarters. And the bus stopped in Winona, you know, at the bus terminal. And four people got off of the bus, you know, to use the restaurant to get food. And two people got off, used the washroom while I was still on the bus. When I looked through the glass, I saw the people rush out. One of the girls would have gone in the washroom. She just got back on the bus. And I stepped off to see what had happened. And Ms. Ponder told me that it was a state highway patrolman and a chief of police on the inside, and began to tap them on the shoulders with billy clubs and order them to get out. And I said, well, this is Mississippi. So I got back on the bus, and as soon as I was seated, I saw them when they began to put the five people, what was, you know, off the bus, but they wasn't over 6 feet from the bus, began to put them in the highway patrolman's car. And I stepped off again because I was holding one of the ladies' irons, you know, that they was arresting. And she said, get back on the bus, Miss Hamer. And then I heard somebody scream from the car that she was in and said, get that one there. And then a white man stepped out of a car and told me I was under arrest. And when he opened the door and I went to get in the car, he kicked me, and they carried me on down to the county jail, where they had the other highway patrolmen had carried the other five. And they, you know, when I walked in with the two white men that had carried me down, and they cursed me all the way down. They would ask me questions, and when I would try to answer, they would tell me to hush. And when I walked inside of the booking room, one of the policemen went over and jumped up on one of the Negroes' feet that was with us. And then they just began to, you know, put us in cells. And I was put in a cell with Miss Evesta Simpson. And after I was put in the cell, I could just hear some horrible screams and horrible sounds, you know, of licks. And I saw one of the girls was 15 years old, was with us. And she passed my cell, and she was real bloody. And then they asked the little man that cleaned up the jail to go inside and mop up that blood. and then I heard some more screaming, and I heard some awful sounds, and I would hear somebody when they say, "Can't you say yes, sir, nigga? Can't you say yes, sir?" And they would call her names that I wouldn't want to go on tape. And she said, "Yes, I can say yes, sir." So I said, and she said, "I don't know you well enough." And I was here when she would hit the floor again. And finally, she began to pray. And she asked God to have mercy on these people because they didn't know what they was doing. And after a while, they passed my cell door with this young woman, Miss Annelle Ponder. And one of her eyes looked like blood, and her hair was standing up on her head, and her clothes had been torn from the shoulder down to the waist. And then three white men came to my cell, and one of them was a state highway patrolman because he was wearing a little silver plate across his pocket that said John L. Bassinger. And he asked me where I was from, and I told him I was from Louisville. And he said, "I'm going to check that." And he went out, and I guess he called Louisville, and they didn't like me in Louisville because I worked with voter registration there. And when he came back, he said, "You damn right." They said, "You're from Louisville, all right, and we going to make you wish you was dead." And they led me out of that cell into another cell, and he gave a Negro prisoner a blackjack, and he ordered me to lay down on a bunk bed. And a Negro prisoner said, "Do you want me to beat her with this, sir?" And he said, "You're damn right, because if you don't, you know what I'll do for you." And I laid down on the bunk like he ordered me to do. And the first Negro beat me. He beat me until he was exhausted. And after he beat, the state highway patrolman ordered the second Negro to take the blackjack. And during the time he was beating, I began to wet my feet because that was a horrible experience. And the state highway patrolman ordered the first Negro that had beat to sit on my feet while the second one beat. And I just began to scream where I couldn't control it. And then the white man got up and began to beat me in my head. I have a blood clot now in the artery to the left thigh and a permanent kidney injury on the right side from that beat. These are the things that we go through in the state of Mississippi, just trying to be treated like a human being. But still, this is called a part of America.
All right. That, again, correction, that wasn't St. Fanny Lou speaking at the committee. That was an interview, and that is what we wanted to share. The information about what happened to her, again, we have to now look at how many decades has it been, and why are we still trying to do the same thing like we've been trying to do it? Well, some anyway. We heard Brother Malcolm earlier, and I wanted to give you that kind of backdrop. Because, again, he was the opening speaker for St. Fanny Lou. And it sounded very much, again, like some of the things that we are actually still experiencing. The lack of support, the mischievousness, for lack of a better word, of people, Negroes, and so forth and so on. In acting or in dealing in a certain kind of way. And so now, family, we are at a point where we really have to begin to do certain things. And so with that said, we're going to now end this segment of New Day, and we hope that we'll be able to reconnect the next time as we give you more information about what's going on with the MWM 25. And also, we're going to give you more information about our sister saints. So we're going to end this segment for now, and we will resume on Saturday our regular program, New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. For now, we are out, and we thank you all again for tuning in. Peace to you all.